वो वासुदेवाय वो रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 13 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड ब्रह्मा स्टीलिंग द बॉयज एंड काव्स टेक्स्ट नंबर 11 बिभ्रद् वेणुं जटरपटयो शृंगवेत्रे च कक्षे वामे पाणौ मशनकवलं तत्फलान्यंगुलीषु तिष्ठन् मध्ये स्वपरिसुहृदो हासयन्नर्मभिस्वै स्वर्गे लोके मिशति बुभुजे यज्ञबुक् बालकेली बिभ्रद् वेणुं जटरपट लेशन एंड परपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एस सी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद ट्रांसलेशन कृष्णा इज यज्ञ बुक दट इज ही ओनली ईट्स ऑफरिंग्स ऑफ यज्ञ बट टू एग्जिबिट हिज चाइल्डहुड पास्ट टाइम्स ही नाउ सैट विथ हिज फ्लूट टक्ड बिटवीन हिज वेस्ट एंड हिज टाइट क्लॉथ ऑन हिज राइट साइड and with his horn bugle and cow driving stick on his left. Holding in his hand a very nice preparation of yogurt and rice with pieces of suitable fruit between his fingers, he sat like the whirl of a lotus flower, looking forward toward all his friends, personally joking with them and creating jubilant laughter among them as he ate. At that time, the denizens of heaven were watching, struck with wonder at how the personality of Godhead, who eats only in yajna, was now eating with his friends in the forest. Purport. When Krishna was eating with his cowherd boyfriends, a certain bumblebee came there to take part in the eating. Thus Krishna joked, "Why have you come to disturb my Brahman friend Madhumangal? You want to kill a Brahman? This is not good." All the boys would laugh and enjoy, speaking such joking words while eating. Thus the inhabitants of the higher planets were astonished at how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who eats only when yajna is offered, was now eating like an ordinary child with his friends in the forest. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, from this chapter of Brahma stealing the cowherd boys and the calves of Lord Krishna. And today is also the most auspicious appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I think I would first like to speak something about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then we'll speak about this particular verse which we are talking about today. So, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's pastimes and his stories are actually unlimited, but we'll just try to narrate something for our own purification. So, in this book, Seventh Goswami, Rupa Vilas Prabhu has actually written the life story of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's mentioned that if you read the earlier life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he actually went through so many sicknesses throughout his life. So many times he got like high fever and jaundice and so many sicknesses. But although he in the 19th century, there were not proper medications were not available, but still he actually he was focused in his goal of spreading the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We see that especially when great souls, when they undergo great suffering in their life in the form of sicknesses or different setbacks in life. Many times it may appear that they are also actually suffering because of their past karma. But actually, when such associates of the Supreme Lord, when they go through suffering, those sufferings are actually directly given by Krishna in order to actually show to the world about the greatness of such a person, that how they actually persevered in such sufferings. Like in one purport in the fourth canto, Maitreya Rishi describes about Prithu Maharaj. He says that, like, Prithu Maharaj enjoyed opulences between the land between Ganges and Yamuna, and it appeared that he was exhausting his past pious karma. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that actually pure devotees like Prithu Maharaj or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when they enjoy some material opulences or when they undergo suffering, it is not because of their past karma, but it only appears that they are exhausting their past karma. Just like one devotee gave this example, during Diwali time we have the snake tablet. So when you light a snake tablet, it appears that there is actually a real snake. But when you just touch it, then it crumbles into ashes. So similarly, the karma of a pure, the sufferings of a pure devotee, it appears like it's because of their karma, but actually it is not their karma. Or Vishnu Chakravarti gives an example of the burnt silk. Burnt silk may appear like a pure silk, but when you touch the burnt silk, it will actually crumble. So similarly, that is the case with the sufferings of a pure devotees. As is explained in the third canto, when Vidura meets Uddhava, Vidura asks a question to Uddhava that, can you tell me how is Pradyumna, who was given birth by Rukmini after she worshipped the Brahmanas? And can you tell me about the welfare of Samba, who was given birth by Jambavati after performing austerities? So there, Vishnu Chakravarti writes that actually Rukmini and Jambavati, they're all actually personal associates of the Supreme Lord. They belong to the Swarupa Shakti of the Lord. They don't need to perform austerities, or they don't need to worship Brahmanas in order to beget the demigods as their sons. So similarly, like when devotees like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when they undergo suffering, when they undergo great austerities in order to spread the message of Lord Chaitanya, it's not that they are actually undergoing because of their past karma. It's only, it's directly given by Krishna in order to tell the people of this world about the greatness of such people. And a few years back in one of the classes, like Gaurang Prabhu was mentioning this point, when he was talking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, like before the British rule, before the Britishers came to India, in India, people were following the Vedic tradition, they were trying to follow the Vedic tradition. Among themselves, there was no like preaching. People were not aware of the Vedic culture outside India. So people were just trying to follow according to their capacity with their so many deviations, etc. So there was this phase was called as insider exchange. That means like the followers of Vedic culture, they were trying to learn from other followers, some of them may be bona fide, some of them may be unbona fide. They were trying to practice among themselves, they were trying to teach among themselves, share the knowledge among themselves. This is the first phase called as insider exchange. And when the Britishers came to India, and when they saw the Vedic, when they saw the Indian culture, the Vedic scriptures, and the opulences of India, Then they started studying the Vedic scriptures, of course, without the help of the true knowers of the Vedas. They started studying among themselves, and then they started writing commentaries, or they started explaining the Vedic scriptures according to their own interpretations, and then they published books for the benefit of the people who are outside India. So this is the second phase called an outsider-outsider exchange. An outsider tried to learn the Vedic scriptures without taking help from the real knowers of the truths of the Vedic scriptures, and then trying to propagate that knowledge according to their mental speculation to outsiders. The second phase called as outsider-outsider exchange. And the result of that, then after that, the Indians, because as Kali Yuga progressed, the Brahmanas, they stopped doing their duties of preaching the message of the Vedas, preaching Krishna consciousness. So then the insiders, the people of India, they started learning their own scriptures from the outsiders, from the books written by the Britishers. So this is the third phase called an outsider-insider exchange. So then the result is, when the Indians, they were trying to follow the culture without the understanding, and in order to get the understanding, they were taking the help of the books written by the outsiders, who wrote according to their own mental speculation. Then the result is, their faith in the culture was shaken, because Britishers wrote the books in order to destroy the Vedic culture. So when the faith of the Indians in the Vedic culture was being shaken, then the fourth phase is called as insider-outsider exchange. That means, a person who is the true knower of the purports of the Vedic scriptures, who knows the essence of the Vedic scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam and the Puranas, then he started propagating that knowledge to the outsiders. So the first person who made such an attempt is actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who basically started this insider-outsider exchange. A person who knows the true purports of the scriptures, he started actually propagating the message of Lord Chaitanya to the outsiders. In once Srila Prabhupada was, he told his servant to make some halwa. So his servant Kartikeya Prabhu, he made some halwa made of like lapsi. So Prabhupada said, halwa means it has to be made of suji only. So I can't eat this halwa. And that servant became little morose. Then he went and prayed to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that your son has actually rejected this halwa, but at least please you accept this halwa, like that. He just started praying to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then after some time, Prabhupada called him. And then he started taking that halwa scoop after scoop. And this disciple, he shares his realization, says that actually the grandfather is more merciful than the father. So by praying to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, after Prabhupada became even more merciful. So similarly, like great-grandfather is even more merciful. And we see that and another quality of Bhakti Vinod Thakur is that his faith in, like he writes in his book, like in 1868, he was posted as a magistrate in Dinjanpur. There, first time he actually received a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrit and Srimad Bhagavatam. So when he first read Chaitanya Charitamrit, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in his biography, on his first reading, he developed faith in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he read second time. When he read second time, he felt that there is no there is no great pandit as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is nobody such a great scholar and such a great devotee like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he developed a doubt. He said, how can such a great personality as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can support the worship of Krishna, whose character is many times questionable, who performed Ras Leela with the gopis, etc. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur developed this doubt. Then he started praying to the Lord that please guide me, I am getting this doubt, please help me in this. And then within few days, he actually developed the right understanding, and then he writes that he could get the realization that the truth about Lord Krishna, the truth of Krishna Tattva and Krishna's pastimes is a deep mystery. He could actually understand the mystery behind Krishna's pastimes. And then when he read Srimad Bhagavatam, he writes that from the beginning I started reading, that I experienced anuraga or spontaneous devotion. So Rupa Vilas Prabhu writes that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, from the beginning when he came in contact with Srimad Bhagavatam Chaitanya Charitamrita, immediately developed the spontaneous devotion. So it was not a gradual evolution progress from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, and then like Ruchi, Asakti, like that. So it was like immediately he developed spontaneous devotion. So basically, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, basically he was under the covering of Yoga Maya. And then Krishna removed that Yogamaya potency, the covering, at a certain point of time. And then immediately, Bhaktivinoda Thakur started exhibiting the spontaneous attraction to Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's like a great devotee, like devotees like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we can say like, they can be compared to like petrol. Petrol and a wet wood. Petrol, when it just comes in contact with a small spark of fire, it immediately blazes into a big flare. It does not need like so much of fire. Small spark of fire is sufficient. And a wet wood, if you have to set ablaze the wet wood, first you have to actually make it dry, and then you have to start... ignite it, and then after some time, gradually, we can actually set ablaze to a great fire. So it's like a gradual process. But in the case of a petrol, like a small spark, and then immediately, it actually becomes a great fire. So similarly, in the case of like pure devotees, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although in their previous life, they appeared like, if you read the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur before coming to Krishna consciousness, it appeared like a life of any normal person who underwent so many suffering, who was attracted to so many other philosophies. But as soon as he came in contact with Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, he immediately exhibited spontaneous devotion. So that is the difference actually. And in 1868, he wrote a poem in glorification of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called as Sachidananda Prema Alankara. And based on, like, after this poem, he was known as like Sachidananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then, and another point of time, in the same year, 1868, there was a controversy between the conservative Hindus and the followers of Ram Mohan Roy, who was the founder of, I think, Brahma Samaj. So that time, both of them, like the followers of Ram Mohan Roy, they invited Bhaktivinoda Thakur to their assembly and to speak on their behalf. And the conservative Hindus, they formed a society and they also invited Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he gave a speech, he actually criticized the sectarianism of the conservative Hindus, At the same time, he pointed out the defects of the followers of Ram Mohan Roy. He glorified Ram Mohan Roy for his scholarship, for his patriotism. But then he also pointed out that because of his neglect of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has gone into a wrong direction. So he didn't get carried away by both of them. He actually pointed out the defects of both of them. At the same time, he glorified Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this way, he actually established the truth, and he also exposed the defects of the different people who are following different paths. And he also called himself as a sectarian thinker before actually he came in contact with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he did not spare even himself. He writes about himself also, that how he was attracted to so many different paths, and then till he came into the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he actually understood the real message of Godhead. And we can also see his faith in Srimad Bhagavatam. In one place, in a place called Chan Paran, so in that place, there was one particular place, it was actually haunted by a ghost in one particular tree. It was haunted by a particular ghost. And even the one ghost was living, that ghost had haunted one judge of a particular court. And because of that, the judge was giving judgments in favor of some local thieves. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he engaged one brahmana to recite Srimad Bhagavatam under the tree for 1 month. And after 1 month, the tree actually fell down. And the ghost actually left that place. Then after that, so many people, of course the thieves were disturbed because they were taking advantage of the ghost. But many people got faith in Srimad Bhagavatam because of the faith of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's character, when he would be working for the British government, he would be so thorough in his work, and he would follow all the principles, even the moral principles, he would follow all the rules and regulations. He was such a person that whenever he would be transferred from one place to another place, the British officers and even the local people, they would very much feel the separation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In fact, at that time, the Britishers would actually make a mockery of the Indians, educated Indians. In fact, at one particular time, the newspaper, there was an advertisement. The advertisement, it was mentioned that wanted sweepers, coolies and bistis for the residents of Saidapur. None but educated Bengali babus who have passed university entrance examination need apply. And ex-deputy magistrates preferred. So basically, the atmosphere at that time was Britishers, they would try to ridicule the Indians, educated Indians also. But with respect to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had such a wonderful character. Because of his high character, even all the Britishers were also attracted towards him. Once there was a British officer called Metcalf. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was working in that one particular place called Mati Hari. Then his servant, he was transferred from that place to another place. His servants came to collect the belongings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But this British officer would not allow the servant to take the belongings, because he did not want Bhaktivinoda Thakur to leave the place. But then later, because there was no chance, there was no option, so he had to leave. So we see that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by his character, he even melted the hearts of people who are very cruel and very hard-hearted. That's why it's mentioned that Dhira Adhira Janapriya, Srinivas Acharya in glorification of six Goswamis, he mentioned that the six Goswamis were dear both to the ruffians and the gentle. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as a seventh Goswami, he also exhibited this quality. And of course, we know this famous story of Bhishaksen. Bhishaksen, that how he was a person who was actually posing himself as Mahavishnu. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was appointed by the British government to actually arrest, to actually investigate the whole case against Bhishaksen, because he was actually cheating many local people. He was actually having illicit relation with the many women, calling himself as Krishna, and he is enjoying Rasalila. So Britishers had complained, he was appointed. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not, he was not doing his duty, because he was given the duty by the British government. Actually, he was motivated by the love for the Supreme Lord, that he could not tolerate that a person, he could not tolerate the blasphemy of the Supreme Lord. Again, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami mentions, like, one of the 64 items is not hearing the blasphemy of the Lord. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur could not actually tolerate that somebody can claim himself as Mahavishnu. So he went with the troop of like police constables, and although this Bhishaksen was exhibiting so many mystic powers, he was trying to scare, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very firm. He was not he was not at all fearful, he was not shaken. And he arrested, of course, it's a long story, but in the whole process, even his own family members were affected. So once he went to meet Bhishaksen in the jail, and Bhishaksen said that, you go and see what is happening in your house. So he went to his house, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw that his own daughter was having high fever, and the whole house, everyone was crying, screaming, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not shaken. We see that in the case of great devotees, again Rupa Goswami, when he describes about the symptoms of a person in bhava, he says, he describes 9 characteristics of a person in bhava. And he mentioned these characteristics are reliable characteristics of a person in bhava. Avyartha kalatvam, kshanti, nama gane sadaruchi, etc. Like perseverance. Despite so many obstacles, a person has strong faith, he continues in the message. His faith is never shaken. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was not at all shaken by these things. And even when you see the daily schedule of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had such a schedule that it's mentioned that he would just sleep for few hours in a day. He would come back home at between 7:30 and 8, he would go to bed, and then he would get up at 10 o'clock, and then till 4 a.m. he would write his books. And 4 o'clock, again he would rest for maximum for an half an hour. And then 4:30 he would chant his rounds. And then 7 o'clock he would answer the correspondence. And 7:30 he would read various religious and philosophical works. And 8:30 he received visitors. So basically, if you see, he didn't waste a single moment. We may not see symptoms hair standing on end or exhibiting ecstatic symptoms, because these symptoms sometimes can be imitated by even by common people. As Shamanantra once made a, he said, made a, he actually, he said, the symptom of love of Godhead is that when a person has love of Godhead, he cannot hide it. And one who does not have, he cannot fake it. So one who has it, he cannot hide. And one who does not have, he cannot fake others. So that is why these symptoms like avyartha kalatvam, kshanti, these are all reliable characteristics of a person in bhava. And these are exhibited by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by his daily schedule and by his strong faith despite so many obstacles. And so we see such are the glories of great soul like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So having glorified Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I'll just try to speak something on today's verse. So today we see that in this particular verse, it's explained that after the killing of Agasur, Krishna is actually, Parishit Maharaj asked this question, that why is it that the residents of Vrindavan discuss this pastime of killing of Agasur after 1 year? Then Shukadeva Goswami greatly appreciates Parishit Maharaj's eagerness, and then he starts narrating further. So here he says that when Krishna and the cowherd boys, when they were taking lunch in the forest of Vrindavan. So this is, we see that Krishna is called as Yajna Bhuk. That means like one who eats only the offerings which are given in the Yajna. But here Krishna is like sharing his remnants to his friends, and then he would take the remnants of other cowherd boys. And by seeing that, the demigods are greatly astonished. Like something like somebody who is only eating in like 5-star hotel. And suppose if he happens to eat in a normal some tea stall or some railway platform stall or something, like people would be surprised. Something can relate. So similarly, the demigods were like surprised that Krishna would eat only, it's known as Yajna Bhuk, but he's just eating some food, remnants of other cowherd boys. In fact, basically, the point is like Krishna is attracted by the love of the residents of Vrindavan. In the 9th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says that Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yome Bhaktya Prayachati Tadaham Bhakti Upakritam Ashnami Prayatatmanaha. Krishna says that if a person offers me with love and devotion a flower or a fruit or some water, I will accept it. Actually, if you see, like fruit is meant to be eaten, but flower is not meant to be eaten. But Krishna is saying, I will eat it. So basically, Jiva Goswami mentions that Krishna is so overwhelmed by bhakti that he is not able to discriminate between whether it is eatable or whether it is supposed to be smelt. So basically, the point is that Krishna is attracted by bhakti. Like when Sudama Brahman comes to meet Krishna, Krishna says that Bhuri anu api upakhritam bhaktai premna Bhuri eva me bhavet Bhuri api abhakto pakhritam name toshaya kalpate. Says that if a devotee offers even little bit out of devotion, then I will consider that as a great offering. On the other hand, a person who is not a devotee, even if he offers something great, then I will not actually accept it. I am not pleased with such an offering. So basically, we see that like Krishna is attracted by devotion. Like mundane example, like for example, like when people see movies, like one devotee sharing that, like even if the movie has some like best stories or best cinematography or best camera or best acting, but for a materialist, a movie will be unacceptable if the romantic element is not present. So although the movie may have the best acting, best story, all the best photography, but for a materialist who is a lusty person, like he will not be satisfied unless the romantic element is present in the movie. That's why, like, even in some spiritual movies, sometimes they insert some romantic elements in order to make it acceptable to the common people. Because, like, that is the main thing that has to be there. So similarly, in the case of Krishna, for Krishna, like everything is unacceptable if the element of bhakti is not there. Even though a person may offer like elaborate offerings, very opulent things, but if the bhakti element is not there, he will not accept it. But if the bhakti element is there, even if the quality of the offering, in the sense, may not be opulent or something, but he will actually accept it with great relish. And as it is mentioned that bhakti is like the appetizer. Suppose if there is a big feast is there, but if a person has no appetite, he cannot eat. Bhakti is like the appetizer which makes Krishna accept all the offerings. And if we see this particular instance, if we compare this particular pastime with another instance in the fourth canto, in the sacrifice of Daksha Prajapati, when Daksha Prajapati performed the second sacrifice, first he actually offended Lord Shiva, and then after begging forgiveness from Lord Shiva, when he performed the second sacrifice, it is explained that at that time Lord Vishnu appeared in the sacrificial arena. When Lord Vishnu appeared, he explained that Tat Tejasa Hataruchya Samajihva Sa Sadvasa Murna Dritanjali Puta Upatastur Adokshajam. It is explained that Tat Tejasa, as soon as Lord Vishnu appeared, the luster of all the other personalities, they immediately faded. In fact, Daksha had so much of luster. So many great personalities were present, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, but all their lusters immediately faded. And Sanna Jihva, everyone became silent. There was like pin drop silence immediately. Sa Sadvasa, and everyone became fearful. And Murdna Dritanjali Puta, they offered their obeisances to Lord Vishnu. And Upatastu, they started praying to Lord Vishnu. And here we see like completely opposite scene. Why the demigods are like, here the cowherd boys, they are like joking. And they are giving their remnants to Krishna, who is the source of Vishnu. So that is why like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, like they were all greatly bewildered. In fact, like when Agasura was killed, Agasura was a demon. He was feared even by the demigods who were drinking like nectar every day. But it's explained that Agasur, when demons were killed, the demigods would come and shower flowers. But when Agasur was killed, the demigods came and started dancing. And in fact, like Lord Shiva also came and started dancing. When Lord Shiva came and started dancing, all the demigods, they gave room for Lord Shiva to dance. Then, when he started dancing, the crescent moon on his body, that also started dancing. Then droplets of nectar, like it sprinkled from the crescent moon, it actually, it sprinkled on the skulls on the body of Lord Shiva. And those skulls, they actually came to life and they also started dancing. So basically, all these demigods were greatly astonished by Krishna's killing of Agasur. But actually, they were even more astonished when Krishna is actually eating his lunch with the cowherd boys. So basically, after seeing the greatness of the Supreme Lord, then when they see the pastimes of Krishna, then a person develops appreciation for the pastimes even more. So the demigods were even more astonished when they saw Krishna's pastime. So actually it's mentioned that like when people eat their lunch, usually people want to be in a relaxed, and may want to like loosen his like tie and the belt. But here Krishna is like having a like tight waist cloth. He's having all these instruments like flute, etc. And it's mentioned that actually when a person is eating, one should be in a serious mood. Actually, one should not talk with others. The Niti Shastra, it is mentioned that if a person does not talk with others while eating, one can reach the abode of heaven. But here like Krishna is like laughing and joking with others. And Krishna is not having some special seat of honor. As a yajna book, Lord Vishnu will have a special seat of honor. But Krishna does not have a special seat of honor. And in fact, Krishna is eating with his left hand. In the left hand he is holding something and then he is eating with his right hand, eating something like, he is using even his left hand in eating. And in fact, Anand Vrindavan Champu says like, Krishna went to Madhumangal and Madhumangal was drinking some buttermilk. And then Krishna punched at the cheeks of Madhumangal. And then buttermilk came out of the mouth of Madhumangal and then Krishna drank that buttermilk. So this is like height of like, all the demigods are greatly astonished. Especially after seeing the killing of Agastya, they were even more astonished. So basically, we see that this quality of like, because these residents of Vrindavan, they possess pure love for Krishna, like Krishna is attracted by that. In the Brahma Samhita, it's mentioned that Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam. So Jiva Goswami mentions, he says, the word Advaita means one who has no equal. And then he says, in what respect Krishna has no equal? He says, Krishna has no equal in giving himself to others. So basically in this quality of being Bhaktavatsal or giving himself to others, Krishna has no equal. And then Advaitam Achyutam, although he gives himself to others, but he does not, like his opulences does not reduce. That is why the word Achyutam, he is infallible. Usually when we give ourselves to others, we'll lose something. But Krishna does not lose something. He remains like, he is Achyuta. And the Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter, Krishna says that, Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartum Avyayam Kartum Avyayam. So, for this word Avyayam, Vishnu Chakravartakur, he gives the meaning. One meaning he gives is that, like, devotional service is imperishable. That means, like, even after liberation, devotional service exists. I happen to read, like, Ramanacharya's commentary. He gives, like, another beautiful meaning. Avyayam means, Krishna says that, I give myself unto one who performs devotional service unto me. And even after giving myself to such a devotee, to a person who performs devotional service, I feel that I have done nothing for him. So that is like another meaning of the word avyayam. So basically, when a person practices devotional service, like Krishna feels so indebted that Krishna actually gives himself to such a person. That's why, like, although he's taking even the remnants of the cowherd by the demigods are greatly astonished. And another point we see is that Krishna is sitting in the center, as the center of the bowl of the lotus, and all the cowherd boys, and he is looking towards each of the cowherd boys. In fact, Vishnu Chakravartakur points out in the purport that all the cowherd boys were able to see Krishna. There were actually millions of cowherd boys, and definitely like half the cowherd boys must be present in the back of Krishna. But everyone was able to see Krishna. Like Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning, it's not that everyone was feeling that Krishna is glancing at them. Everyone was feeling that Krishna was actually staring at them. So basically, each one could actually feel the reciprocation. Like in one lecture, the 7th canto, Radhanath Swami Maharaj explained a beautiful point. He was explaining about the cause of envy. So basically, there are two causes of envy. One cause of envy is basically material desires. Prabhupada points out in the purport in the first canto that when a person has some selfish desire, some desire apart from the desire to please the Lord, some material desire is there, then a person will have envy. Because he will see that some other person will have that opulence to a great degree. So then he will feel envious of that particular person. But then, another cause of envy is that, like, even though one may have material desire, But then when a person is living in a cultured environment, then that envy may not be brought out, because when you're living with a cultured people, we may not bring out that envy. Uh-huh. Although we may have the material desires, we may feel envious of others. But sometimes the envy is brought out when some partiality is shown to some people, and when somebody is favored and somebody else is not favored, then that envy is actually brought out. When that envy actually comes out. Just like, for example, in the case of Chitraketu Maharaj, you know, he was a devotee king. Of course, he had an intense desire to have a son. But then, so because he was a devotee king, he must have definitely married other devotee wives. Huh. Like Radhanath Maharaj explained in a class that. He must have definitely married devotee wives. Huh. So they were also like cultured people. Huh. But then, when Chitraketu Maharaj was favoring Krita Dyuti, then all the other wives became envious. Chitraketu Maharaj did not consciously favor Krita Dyuti and did not consciously neglect, but because of the attachment to the son, he only favored that king. So because of that partial treatment, the envy in the other wives were actually brought out, and then they actually poisoned the child. So basically, another cause of envy is partiality on the part of the master. So in the spiritual world, if you see, both the causes of envy are not present. Huh. The spiritual world, all the residents, they don't have any material desire. They only have the desire to please the Lord. That is from the point of view of the devotee. And from the point of view of the Supreme Lord, he reciprocates with each devotee so perfectly that the devotee feels Krishna is having so much of love for me. So because of that, he doesn't feel actually envy towards anybody else. So basically we can see that point, that Krishna is looking forward towards everyone. That everyone is actually feeling, oh, Krishna is looking forward to me. So Maharaj was mentioning that class, that in this world, like psychologists and psychiatrists, when they deal with the mental problems of the people, they give some counseling, they give a feeling of self-worth. They give a sense of worth to the particular person. But then, that kind of counseling can only temporarily give a feeling of self-worth, and it can also inflate one's false ego. But if you really want to do paropakar, one has to bring a person one has to bring a person close to Krishna. When a person comes close to Krishna, then he will feel the love of Krishna, then he will no longer feel envy towards other people. So that is the ultimate solution for envy, is to actually come close to Krishna. But of course, theoretically one has to be convinced that one should not act as that envy. And at the same time, one should take shelter of Krishna. And when a person comes close to Krishna, then he feels so much satisfied, then one doesn't feel envious of others. So that is the nature of spiritual world. And in our level, if we see in the material, but we are in the material world, we may see that, in the case of Vrindavan Vasi, Krishna was, when the cowherd boys, when they saw that, they saw that Krishna is looking towards them. But in our case, in a festival day, it's not that you sit in the back or you are sitting in the courtyard, you don't feel that, oh, you don't get the darshan of the Lord. You don't see that, oh, deities are looking towards us. So, in our level, the situation is different. But still, actually, Krishna has invested the same potency in the process of devotional service. We see the process of devotional service. The process of devotional service is such that one may want to render a particular service, but one may not get the opportunity to render that particular service. Or one may have the opportunity only rarely. But if we see the process of devotional service, it's such a process that if a person is sincere, and if a person is sincerely wanting to engage the service, Krishna will accept that mood. That's why Rupa Goswami, one of the 64 items, he mentioned this item called as dhyanam, meditation. And in meditation, he mentions about Rupa Dhyanam and Seva Dhyanam, he mentions. Seva Dhyanam means like meditating on a particular service to the Lord. And then he tells the story of that Brahmana Pratishthanpur. So that means the process of devotional service is so great that even though we may not have the physical opportunity to render the service, but if a person in the mind, if a person's mind is fixed on the Lord, if a mind is fixed on that particular service, Krishna will actually accept that service, and Krishna actually took that Brahman back to God. And he didn't have any opportunity to worship the deities. He just actually, if you read that story, like in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada says that, like, when you go for deity worship, like first purify the water. We Gange Che, Mune Cheva, Godavari, Saraswati, we invite all the holy rivers. But over a period of time, we just mechanically chant the mantras. Sometimes consciousness is not there in that. But this Brahmana Pratishthanpur, in his meditation, he personally went to all the holy rivers and collected waters. So then, because he was sincere, like actually Krishna took him back to God. He didn't have any opportunity. On the other hand, we may have some opportunity, but if our mind is not fixed on the Lord, one may actually, one may not see the opportunity which we have, or one may actually see what we don't have. So basically, like Krishna has invested the same potency in the process of devotional service. So in the same way, that's why like one can actually, when a person follows the process of devotional service, one can feel that same reciprocation of Krishna. One will not feel that, oh, I'm not being reciprocated. And another point, like Krishna is joking with the friends. We see that in the spiritual world, even laughter and joking, they are also present, like hasyaras. Like Radhanath Maharaj was explaining in a class that just like tears of loving separation wash away the material conception, so similarly, the laughter of devotees, when they release the humor of other devotees, they also wash away the material conception. One devotee asked Prabhupada that devotees laugh when Achyutanand Swami gives class. So Prabhupada said, if somebody can make devotees laugh, that means he is intelligent. So basically, like even laughter is also present in Krishna, like in the spiritual world. But only thing is, there is a thin line between frivolousness and friendship. Like sometimes the name of like friendship, one may be frivolous and one may end up committing offenses. So like Krishna is here making a joke. He's saying that, oh, bumblebee, do not actually go and bite Madhumangal because he is a Brahmana. Then all the cowherd boys started laughing. So Radhanath Maharaj explained that if you don't consider this joke as the funniest joke you have ever heard in your life, that means you still have material conception. Still material impurities are there. So basically, the point is, like Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion, when a person has love for Krishna, even an ordinary activity performed by Krishna will be actually relished by devotees. And when a person does not have love for Krishna, even the extraordinary activity performed by a person will not be actually attractive to a person. So this joke seems like a funny joke. Like, we don't get so much of laughter. But for the residents of Vrindavan, because they have love for Krishna, they'll actually laugh. So that is this thing. So for us, like, we have to practice like Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And when we practice Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti with the eagerness, then one can actually gradually progress, like by the mercy of spiritual master and the Srila Prabhupada. So to summarize, we first talked about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, about how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the first person who actually propagated the message of Lord Chaitanya to the outside world. And we talked about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's faith in Srimad Bhagavatam, and how his perseverance of his how he did not waste a single moment, and how he was wanted to establish the truth. He could not tolerate any blasphemy of the Supreme Lord. And then we talked about this particular verse. He talked about that how the demigods are greatly surprised because after seeing the greatness of Lord Krishna in killing Agasur, and then when they saw these pastimes of Krishna, they were even more struck with wonder. And then he compared the situation in Daksha Yajna with this particular, it's completely opposite situation. And how Krishna does not follow any of the rules which a person is supposed to follow while eating. And we talked about how in the spiritual world, there is no cause of envy, both on the part of the devotee and also on the part of the Supreme Lord. So I'll stop here. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.